Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, our Moscow correspondent joins us to talk about the downing of a Russian military plane. An analyst says the ISIS threat is greater than that posed by Al-Qaeda. And our music man tells us about a new album from Ellie Goulding.
28, and she is the picture of fitness and health. In fact, she appears now on the cover of Shape magazine, showing off her six-pack abs.
It's all right here on The Voice of America. Russia says one of its fighter jets has been shot down along the border between Turkey and Syria. On the line with us is Daniel Scharf, our Moscow correspondent. Daniel, what can you tell us about this?
Well, the Russian Ministry of Defense confirmed that an Su-24 was shot down on the Turkish-Syria border. They say it crashed on the Syrian side. And from their statements, they say that it was ground fire that brought down this fighter plane and that the two pilots inside were able to eject. Now, the Turkish side is saying, of course, that they shot down this fighter jet with their own F-16s, and they shot it down because, according to the Turkish side, it repeatedly ignored their warnings to get out of Turkish airspace. And so they finally decided they needed to take it down and shot it out of the sky.
This is part of the fight against ISIS in Syria.
Well, the Russians have been bombing what they say are Islamic State terrorists and other terrorist groups inside Syria. There does appear to be a shift a little bit more towards, according to Western sources, towards targeting of ISIS in Syria by the Russian forces. Early on in their campaign, they were accused overwhelmingly of bombing mostly anti-Assad forces, that is, the rebels who are opposed to the president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad. But there has been a shift somewhat, according to Western sources, that they're focused more on IS targets now. Along the border, we've seen, this is not the first time that we've seen tension along the border with Turkey, with other Russian planes that did violate the Turkish border. The Russian side even admitted in October that some of their fighter jets had violated the Turkish border. They said it was by accident and blamed bad weather. Of course, Turkey and NATO sources as well, NATO spokesman rather, very openly said that they believed that it was not an accident, that Russia was more or less skirting along the border, either ignoring it on purpose or trying to test the waters a little bit to see how far they could push the NATO side and push the Turkish side.
Well, the United States have been meeting with Russian officials in trying to coordinate all this so there aren't this kind of problem.
They have been exchanging some information in terms of how the two sides should react if there is any sort of a close quarters that happen in the sky, because, of course, you know, we've got Russian fighter jets in the skies over Syria. We've also got NATO and U.S. and the anti-Islamic State coalition forces that are up in the skies. So the concern was that at some point the warplanes of Russia and the warplanes of the Islamic State coalition led by the U.S. at some point could get close enough that there could be incidents, there could be problems. And so they did come to an agreement that there would be certain procedures that would take place if they did come close to each other to try and prevent any kind of misunderstandings that could lead to accidents or an exchange of fire that could quickly escalate into something more serious. There was a practice run of that scenario that took place just a matter of weeks ago, and it was considered a success in that the two sides were able to signal each other successfully, and so this was a procedure that was developed to try and prevent things from happening up in the sky. But as far as the border is concerned, Russia had said that it was going to be more cautious and try to make sure that these things didn't happen in the future. They said that back in October. painted it as simply being a mistake. This, of course, now is a much more serious incident because a Russian fighter jet has been shot down, and we have a clear contradiction between the two sides as to what exactly happened. Turkey, of course, is a member of NATO, so this brings into question what will be the NATO response, what will be Russia's response, especially if it comes out, very clearly that Turkey, in fact, shot down this Russian airplane. The Russian side is trying to say that that's not the case, that it was shot down by forces on the ground, which appears to be setting up the scenario that some rebel forces in Syria may have been responsible. At least that's what the Russian side is so far implying.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel.
My pleasure.
On the web today concerning this story, there are many videos, tweets, and photos. Fox News reports video footage of the incident showed the plane on fire before crashing on a hill. Rami Abdur Aman, who heads the Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, said the warplane crashed in the Turkmen Mountains region in the coastal province of Latakia. Today's Zaman writes, Dmitry Peskov, Russian President Vladimir Putin's spokesman, called the downing of the Russian warplane a very serious incident, but said it was too early to draw conclusions. Quote, it is just impossible to say something without having full information, he told reporters. It says a Turkish official speaking to Reuters said the downing of the jet was not an action against any specific country, but a step to defend Turkey's sovereign territory. Christoph Waskowski says the Turkish military says downed jet was warned 10 times over the airspace violation. Media Center writes, the big question now, of course, is how Russia will respond. Yaroslav Tomryov tweets, decision to shoot down Russian warplane was made personally by the Turkish prime minister. Zaid Benjamin says the plane hadn't violated Turkish airspace and was in an altitude of 6,000 meters. Carl Bildt writes, well, something like this was bound to happen sooner or later. Yanis Kosomatis tweets, this is too serious, especially if Russian pilot is captured. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A couple of British scientists have found that winds of over 2 kilometers per second are blowing around HD 189-733b, an exoplanet located about 63 light years away from us. According to the researchers, the exoplanet's wind speed is about 7 times the speed of sound and is 20 times greater than the fastest wind speed ever known here on Earth. The scientists used data from the High Accuracy Radial Velocity Planet Searcher, or HARPS. It's a high-resolution spectrograph device at the European Southern Observatory's La Silla telescope in Chile. The information allowed the researchers to gauge and map the planet's wind speed. They say it's the first time a weather system of a planet outside of our own solar system has been measured and mapped directly. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
French President François Hollande meets with President Obama at the White House today as his diplomatic offensive to develop an international coalition against the Islamic State continues. My colleague Victor Beatty is following this story and joins us now here in the studio. Welcome, Victor.
Well, Susan, thank you. Mr. Hollande's offensive began Monday with a meeting with British Prime Minister David Cameron in Paris. Well, White House spokesman Josh Earnest Monday said Mr. Obama will express solidarity with the French in the wake of that November 13 Paris attack that killed 130 people.
Frankly, what President Obama is interested in doing is showing, I think, in a very visible way, the solidarity that the United States of America feels with our allies in France, even in this very difficult hour for that country. This is a nation that's grieving. This is a nation that's concerned about the security situation inside their country, and they can and should take a lot of solace in knowing that the most powerful country in the world has their back.
Mr. Hollande is to meet German Chancellor Angela Merkel Wednesday, Russian leader Vladimir Putin Thursday, and China's President Xi Jinping on Sunday. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Israel today, where he was to meet with Israeli officials to discuss the Islamic State threat, Syria, and ways to end the latest violence between Israelis and Palestinians. Monday, Mr. Kerry was in Abu Dhabi and, in the wake of the Paris terrorist attacks, spoke with NBC Television about the global travel alert issued by the U.S. State Department.
We don't have a specific threat stream or specific evidence in front of us, but there is always, as we've said to people for years, the threat of some actor, some lone wolf person, someone who slipped through. That's the world we're living in today, and we understand that. Ever since 9/11, many experts across the United States, without regard to political party or to elections, have consistently said to us it's probably not a question of if, it's a question of when. We have every single effort being made by Homeland Security, by the FBI, by Interpol, by intelligence communities to exchanging information, and people are working hard at this.
Mr. Kerry says while progress in combating the Islamic State has been made, he acknowledges the pace has to be picked up. Monash University terror expert Luke Howey in Australia told me the IS threat is greater now than was posed by Al-Qaeda, and the travel alert is a natural reaction to a rising state of fear and anxiety about future attacks.
I think the reality is the threat is not necessarily greater than it was 3 months ago. We just have a different awareness of what that threat might mean at this present moment in time. ISIS are buoyed by recent successes, what would be viewed in their organization as successes, and they're probably going to look to capitalize on those successes by carrying out more spectacular attacks.
The announcement cites attacks in France, Nigeria, Denmark, Turkey, and Mali over the past year as the justification for such an alert. Do you see Islamic State, which is dominating the news on all points these days, really gelling as a global terror threat?
Yes, they are gelling as a global terror threat. We should never think of this in organizational terms. The prevailing metaphor when talking about Al-Qaeda 10 or 11 years ago was that they're a bit like a Hydra-type organization. The mythological figure, not in the James Bond sense, although there's some crossover there. But the idea is you cut off one part of the organization and more parts appear in its place. ISIS is certainly more diverse than that. It's less organized and less structured. And what you see is people who are inspired by ISIS via online radicalization or via their own personal journey of radicalization. They're willing to do things in ISIS's name, even though ISIS would have no connection with them whatsoever. America and Australia and places like that are going to be most concerned about homegrown threats, the lone wolf style, the radicalization online. But in Europe, of course, with malleable borders, with more fluid borders, the prospects of people crossing borders to carry out attacks is obviously a much greater threat.
Luke, I want to talk about Brussels and its extension of a maximum security alert for the rest of this week, although it is saying that its metro system and schools may reopen on Wednesday. Is this alert primarily to keep people off the streets and to avoid possible attacks, or is this giving authorities a chance to go after those who may be ringleaders or planning such attacks?
I think a little bit of both. One can imagine that this is partly the sort of unknown unknowns space. When intelligence organizations have a certain amount of chatter or a certain amount of credible intelligence, but they don't necessarily know exactly what it means, there can be the need to sometimes take drastic but ultimately precautionary measures. And I tend to agree with you, especially given the 400 round of ammunition shootout recently to capture one of the terrorist masterminds from the Paris attack. There is obviously good need to keep the streets in a low-key setup, in a low-key format. Having said that, the moment we stop going to school, the moment we stop going to work and catching public transport, well, that's it. We have officially lost the war on terror. That doesn't mean that a short-term shutdown might not be highly appropriate, as I imagine it could very well be in the Belgian context. I wouldn't second-guess their intelligence agency's decisions. But to answer your question more directly, certainly I would have thought a blend of both, an opportunity to go rigorously after the extremists, and in addition to that, ensure the streets are safe. And of course, you know, you always have a constant stream of soccer matches, international football games being played across Europe as well, and sporting events are particularly high-profile targets for would-be terrorists. Although, as we saw in Paris, sporting events are often hardened targets as well and much more difficult to attack, as was the case with the security guard that prevented the suicide bomber entering the stadium, which is a situation emulated in lots of different parts of the world.
Luke Howey says French President Hollande's efforts to forge an anti-IS coalition holds promise, even though the U.S. and Russia have different objectives in Syria. He says Moscow, facing its own jihadist threats, also has important European allies, and needs to show its support in efforts to prevent further attacks in European cities.
Thank you for that report, Victor.
All right, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, a quick look at the French leader's visit to the White House. And a popular 28-year-old appears to have another hit on her hands. The White House is preparing for a visit by the French President, François Hollande. And our correspondent from the White House, Alru Pandey, has joined me here in our studios to give us a little preview. What do you expect to happen tomorrow, Alru? And first of all, let me welcome you.
Thank you so much, Susan. Well, the White House has come out and said that this really will be an opportunity for President Obama to underscore the friendship and solidarity with France and President Hollande. Obviously, just days after this terrorist attack in Paris, President Obama has called France the United States' oldest ally. And both the leaders will be looking to consult and coordinate, especially on this investigation into the attack. And also further cooperation in this counter-ISIL coalition that is fighting the Islamic State militant group in Iraq and Syria. So we will be seeing both a symbolic visit with Hollande speaking with Obama, and both are expected to also address reporters as well.
Well, thank you very much, Haru.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
This is Greenby for a healthier planet.
The good news is China's air quality improved in 2015. The bad news is it's still pretty bad for parts of China, where a thick haze of smog recently raised alerts in several cities. China's rapid growth over the last three decades is blamed for much of its pollution problems, putting economic concerns over the environment. So far this year, though, China saw a slight improvement after Beijing pledged to put stricter air pollution controls in place. Greenpeace campaigner Dong Liangse says it's a good start.
From the data and the numbers, we can see the air quality in Beijing is improving. But we believe the Chinese government needs to put in place stricter and more efficient measures.
China's air quality is blamed for more than a million deaths every year. The smog is especially bad in the winter, with increases in coal-powered energy for heating. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
Ellie Goulding, the popular British singer, has released her third album. And to share with us all about it is Larry London, host of Border Crossings. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Susan. Yes, the name of the new album is Delirium. It is Ellie Goulding's third album, and she already finds the album at the number three position on the UK
charts. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
And very impressive.
And she has one hit you particularly like.
I really like this song, and it's called On My Mind, which is a top 20 UK chart hit and doing very well here in the U.S. on the American charts. And the song, a lot of people are saying, is her answer to Ed Sheeran's song, Don't. He wrote a song, recorded a song, was about a relationship where the other person in the relationship cheated on him and broke his heart. And now this supposedly is her response to him, because the two of them did, in fact, have a relationship at one time.
Now I don't understand it. You don't mess with love, you mess with the truth. And I know I shouldn't say it, but my heart don't understand why I got you on my mind.
You always know the story behind the story and the dirt on everybody.
I do. I've got the dirt. If you want dirt, I've got piles of it.
Well, what's this young woman like? 28. That seems young to me.
28, and she is the picture of fitness and health. In fact, she appears now on the cover of Shape magazine, showing off her six-pack abs and talking about her workout regime, which is about 5 days a week, sometimes 2 days, two times a day. She's been dating another singer in the UK. His name's Dougie Pointer. A lot of people wonder, are they getting married? She's been seen with a diamond ring, sometimes with it, sometimes without it. She was in Stockholm recently for the Swedish Idol TV show. She sang her new song, On My Mind, on the show. She appears in the latest Marie Claire magazine. And she also just filled in for Rihanna at the Victoria's Secret Supermodel concert. They had a big, giant show. Rihanna was supposed to appear. She pulled out at the last minute, and Ellie Goulding came into the rescue.
Can you tell me She likes to use the name Golding, even though her name's not spelled that way.
That's right. It's interesting because she does spell it G-O-U-L-D-I-N-G, but she says, call me Golding, not Goulding. And so we'll make sure we do exactly that. And by the way, she got the Brit Award in 2014 for the favorite British female singer. So she's loved in England and she's loved around the world.
You think she's a keeper?
She's definitely a keeper.
Okay, thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Susan.
And speaking of people in the news, Pope Francis begins his first official visit to Africa Wednesday. The stops planned in Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic, a trip that human rights advocates hope he will use to press for expanded political rights, religious tolerance, and respect for minorities. The Pope makes his first stop in Kenya, where he will visit a slum, in keeping with his advocacy for the poor. We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast or any previous program for the Voice of America, for that matter, that I know of, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the November 14th meeting of the International Syria Support Group in Vienna, members expressed a unanimous sense of urgency to end the suffering of the Syrian people, the destabilization of the region, and the resulting increase in terrorists like Daesh, drawn to the fighting in Syria. To advance a diplomatic solution to the horrific civil war, the parties agreed on concrete steps to advance a nationwide ceasefire and a political process in accordance with the Geneva Communique of June 2012. Secretary of State John Kerry spoke of what was accomplished in Vienna.
So for the first time, we got people to sit down at the table, and everybody, including Iran and including Russia, signed on to a communique that said, we all want a united Syria. We all want a secular Syria. We all want a Syria in which the minorities are fully protected and there is tolerance and respect for different religions and different cultures.
But both Secretary of State Kerry and President Barack Obama have emphasized that the war in Syria will not end as long as Syrian President Bashar al-Assad remains in power. It is Assad's brutality against the Syrian people that continues to draw terrorists like Daesh to Syria and help them to flourish. And, as Secretary of State Kerry has noted, Assad has cut his own deal with Daesh.
The Daesh headquarters sat in Raqqa for years. It was never bombed by his bombs. It was children and women in hospitals and schools that were bombed by his bombs.
President Barack Obama said that if Assad continues in power, it is unimaginable that the civil war in Syria will stop when the overwhelming majority of people in Syria consider him to be a brutal, murderous dictator. He cannot regain legitimacy. Mr. Obama said that Assad's allies, Russia and Iran, are going to have to make a fundamental choice, either to continue to prop up Assad or to save the Syrian state and work with the international community and the UN to find a government that truly can be legitimate. The ongoing talks on Syria, President Obama said, create the space needed for Russia and Iran, among others, to make the pivot necessary to help end the war in Syria and assist the world in uniting against the lethal threat posed by Daesh.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
I'm Christopher.